Chapter 4. Progress. Tradition is the enemy of progress. That was written in large letters on the big wooden sign in front of the mission school. It was the first thing we were taught to read. Anything that belonged to the Navajo way was bad, and our Navajo language was the worst. Without thinking, when I saw Mr. Reamer the second day I was at mission school, I spoke the polite Navajo greeting my parents had told me I should always use to an elder. Instead of greeting me back, he yelled something, slapped his hand over my mouth, and picked me up under his arm like I was a little puppy who had done something bad. He carried me inside to the sink where there was a bar of brown soap floating in a bucket, forced me to open my mouth, and then shoved that big wet bar of soap into it. He rubbed it back and forth between my teeth so hard that foam came out of my mouth and my nose. The soap even got into my eyes and I couldn't see. I choked and coughed and thought I was going to die. Finally, Mr. Reamer decided I'd had enough. He ducked my head into the bucket, dropped me on the floor, and just walked away as if nothing unusual had happened. I staggered outside and fell down to my knees. My vision was blurry, and my lips were cut and bleeding. Tom Inez, who was the first friend I made in school, lifted me to my feet. He and another bigger boy I hadn't yet met, whose bunk was close to mine, had to help me get back to the dormitory because I couldn't walk without falling. "My relative, you will return to balance again," that bigger boy, whose name I later learned was Jesse Chi, whispered in my ear in Navajo. "The holy people haven't forgotten you." Somehow Jesse Chi knew I had to hear our language just then, though it was a risk even to whisper it. Those teachers had ears that seemed to hear our thoughts. I knew I had found another friend. I also knew that I never wanted to experience that awful soap again, so I tried my best to avoid speaking Navajo when any adult could hear. I never had my mouth washed out again, but still, to this day, I cannot see a bar of brown soap without feeling a little sick to my stomach. That same punishment was given to the other boys and girls who spoke Navajo. Whenever they did so, their mouths would be washed out. It happened to Jesse Chi, to Tom Inez, to Samuel Many Horses, and to everyone I knew. I don't think a single child escaped having his or her mouth roughly washed out with soap. Most learned a lesson quickly and watched what they said. However, some of the children were not just forgetful about using our language. They were openly defiant. They refused to give up speaking Navajo. So they were beaten with heavy sticks. Principal O'Sullivan, who was also the head disciplinarian, punished the most defiant children. He had a favorite stick that hung on the wall behind his desk. Sometimes he would beat the boys and girls so badly that they would not be able to walk the next day. John Roanhorse, who also had a bed in my part of the dormitory, was one of the most stubborn ones. His mouth was washed out so often that it no longer seemed to bother him. "That Bilagana soap is not so bad," he said to Jesse and Tommy and me one night in the dormitory. "I am getting to like the taste of it." Even being beaten didn't stop John Roanhorse from speaking Navajo. He was the biggest of the boys, and he would stand there, taking a beating without crying. Principal O'Sullivan just about wore himself out hitting him. He even broke one of his favorite sticks over John Roanhorse's back. So it was decided that a simple beating wasn't enough. John Roanhorse was taken into the cold stone basement and chained in a dark corner. He was kept there for a week with nothing to eat but pieces of stale bread and nothing to drink but water. When they brought him out, his eyes seemed as small as those of a mole, and there was a lost look on his face. I think a part of his spirit was left down in that cold, dark place. I was never openly defiant like John Roanhorse had been. Nor was I like the careless boys and girls who kept speaking Navajo when our teachers, who watched us the way coyotes watch a prairie dog hole, could hear them. I did my best to learn English. As the days turned into weeks, then months and years, I began not just to do well in my classes, but to do better than any other student, especially in such subjects as history and geography. learning and remembering things of the past, and finding out about faraway places was interesting to me. I seemed to be a perfect student. When my Bilagana teachers looked at me, they saw a little Navajo boy who did just what he was told, never got in trouble, and studied hard. Whenever I was called on, I would stand right up. "Yes, teacher," I would say, widening my eyes and nodding my head as I spoke. "Yes, teacher." Those were the two words I spoke more than any others when I was in mission school. They were like magic. Even if I didn't understand something, all I had to do was say those words to make my white teachers nod back at me or smile. Sometimes they didn't even ask me to answer the question. "Very good, Nettie," they would say. However, I was stubborn in ways the teachers couldn't see. I spoke nothing but Navajo whenever I was alone with other Indian students. In the basement of the school, or out back behind the woodshed, I learned Navajo songs and stories. Some students in that school, especially after being beaten enough times for talking Indian, reached a point where it became hard for them to speak Navajo, even when they wanted to. But it wasn't that way for me. If anything, rather than taking my language away from me, boarding school made me more determined never to forget it. So I held on to my sacred language while learning the words and the ways of the whites. But I had no idea, even in my wildest dreams, that the very language those Bilagana teachers tried to erase, the way you wipe words from a blackboard, would one day be needed by important white men.